Hi, this is Lucy Sanders. I'm the CEO for the National Center for Women and Information Technology, or NCWIT, and this is one in a continuing series of interviews that we're doing with women who have started either IT companies or organizations that are based on information technology. We're very excited that we have Jessica Flannery here today from Kiva to talk to us. Also with me is Larry Nelson from W3W3.com. Hi, Larry.
Hi. It's really a pleasure to be here, and I must say that we're getting tremendous feedback from not only adults who are having their children listen to some of these interviews, but some of the employers that are looking for more women and more technical people to get into the business, which is sometimes a very good step to become an entrepreneur.
Also with me today is Lee Kennedy, who is a director of NCWIT and a serial entrepreneur herself. Right now, her current company is called Tricalix. Hi, Lee. How are you?
Hi, Lucy. Hi, Larry. So good to be here.
It is. We're the three L's, right?
Lucy,
Lee, and Larry?
Or something. So welcome, Jessica. We're very happy to have you with us today. And the topic that we're going to talk about, I mean, you're a fabulous social entrepreneur. And, you know, I think that this whole area of microfinance and what Kiva is doing is just fascinating. And as part of this interview, we all went and spent time on the Kiva site and just really got lost in all the wonderful stories that are out there. So welcome.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, and for our listeners, I'm sure everybody knows, but just it bears repeating that Kiva is the first peer-to-peer microloan website, and it really demonstrates how the internet can be used to facilitate these meaningful types of connections between people who want to lend money and entrepreneurs all over the world, and especially in the developing countries, how we can all help each other really move the economies ahead. And it's just a really fascinating website. So, Jessica, why don't you just spend a minute and tell us a bit about Kiva?
Sure. Well, you said it very, very well and very concisely. I mean, we're the world's first person-to-person microlending website, so anybody in the world can go onto the site, browse business profiles and entrepreneur profiles, really, I should say, whether that person is, you know, a farmer or selling small goods in their village, or a seamstress or a restaurant owner. They're all different kinds of small businesses, and you can lend as little as $25 to that entrepreneur. And over time, you get updates on that business, and then you get paid back.
Wow.
Well, and Kiva is a fairly young organization. I read someplace that you all started as a bit of a hobby website, and it just exploded.
Yeah, so it's been a very, very busy last 4 years. 4 years ago, I learned about microfinance and decided that's what I want to do. I quit another job, and I went to East Africa for a few months to see it up close and personal. And while I was there, it was impossible not to be deeply moved by the stories of success of the people that I was meeting. People had used often just $100 to change their lives and lift their families out of poverty. So I became really excited about these stories and wanted to share them with my own friends and family. And as I did that, my husband Matt and I kept asking, not just, oh, this is great, microfinance works, but, wow, how do we and our friends and family, how do we enable people to lend money directly to these individuals we're meeting? So it started out in a very specific way, very specific context with individuals who we had met face-to-face in Kenya and Tanzania and Uganda who we wanted to help. We wanted to participate in their amazing stories, and we wanted to see them get to the next level. So what we did was basically Matt came to visit me during this time in East Africa, and then he went back home, built a website, and we emailed our friends and family and said, hey, we have 7 businesses in Uganda that we'd like to lend a total of $3,000 to. Do you want to pitch in? And overnight, that money came in. And then we sent that along to Uganda. We had a 6-month kind of beta round with these 7 entrepreneurs in Uganda. And after the 6 months, they'd repaid, and we sort of took the word beta off of our site, and that launched us. And that was just in October of 2005, so not even quite 3 years ago. And our first year was $500,000 in loans. The second year was $13.5 million more. And today we're just around $45 million, and we haven't even finished our third year. So it's grown very rapidly.
And they have an incredible payback on the loans. Incredible payback.
Yeah, it's in the high 90%. And that's representative of microfinance overall, not just our site.
But wow, that's just an incredible history and such a good cause as well. One of the things that I noticed, there was a Pop Tech video on YouTube
yeah.
that I watched that I thought was really interesting, where You mentioned that you all created the tool that Kiva uses really to match lenders and entrepreneurs without really knowing how the world would use it, to your previous story. This gets us to our first question, which is around technology, and I thought you would have a really interesting spin on this. You know, how in general do you see technology helping missions like those of Kiva? Slightly different than potentially a for-profit business, but you have incredibly interesting uses of technology. So what do you see in the future?
Kiva does a lot of different things, but our mission is to connect people through lending to alleviate poverty. And the real key there, like we've been saying, is to connect people. It's not about the money transfer is very interesting, and technology obviously helps that happen. But what really we care about is this connectivity. Loans happen to be a great tool for poverty alleviation as well as connectivity. I mean, if you lend me something and I have it and I'm slowly giving it back to you, you're going to pay a little bit more attention, usually, than if you just donate something and I tell you how that's going forever and ever. With technology, you can, I mean, that back and forth of communication is obviously free or a lot less expensive. It's quick. It's real time. You can see on the other side of the planet how this person is waiting right now, today, for, you know, that $200 that's going to allow them to start their business. So there are all these elements that technology makes it faster, more efficient, less expensive, and just overall easier to have that human connection happen. And then in very specific ways, you know, while I said the money is not the point, it's a great tool for a lot of things. For example, we've had a lot of help from great technology leaders out there that we've been able to leverage. So PayPal, you know, we're the first nonprofit to have PayPal generously agree to provide free payment transactions. So we literally zero variable costs for sending these little bits of money back and forth all around the planet every day.
Well, and one thing, too, that I'm a technologist, so I'll get off this question in just a minute. I know Larry and Lee are looking at me like, move off the technology. But I do have one more thing to observe here, because this is a different kind of interview than we've done. There's a whole growing area called ICT4D, which is Information and Communication Technology for Developing World. And one of the things I read that you all either have done or will do is you make sort of like an offline browser so that people can conserve power on their computer. So sort of a low energy kind of browser so that they don't have to always be plugged in. That's an example of the type of technology around ICT4D that you really have to start thinking about the climates and the situation and the resources that people have all around the world.
It's been very, very interesting for us to see even how sometimes, you know, we'll have really wonderful, generous lenders say, hey, I also want to donate financially or otherwise. And let's say they send, you know, a great batch of brand new digital cameras for us to send out to the field. Well, sometimes, actually, a lower tech solution is better because of the technology that's available in the field. So, you know, maybe we don't need the highest quality photos, the highest res photos. Maybe a lower tech solution is better. And that's been interesting to watch, just figuring out really what's the best and what's the most appropriate tool to get the job done.
That's exactly right. So we normally ask what it is that you love about being an entrepreneur, but since you're working with entrepreneurs, you know, it would be great to hear about the stories from the entrepreneurs out of Kiva, as well as what it is that you love about this whole environment and the entrepreneurship.
Okay, I like that. No, it's a really good question. I mean, what I've found is the idea of being an entrepreneur, I think that's really attractive to a lot of people. And I think there are some, I don't want to put value judgments on it, you know, good or bad, better or worse, but I think sometimes it has to do with freedom or this idea of being your own boss or something like that. For me, my introduction to business and entrepreneurship at all was in Africa, seeing people who were, you know, goat herders or subsistence farmers or fishermen or people that were basically, entrepreneurship to them was doing what they needed to do every day to survive. And they were, it was almost like not an option. They had to do the next thing, figure out the next step to, you know, to get closer and closer to their goal or to find food and basically survive that day. So it's very hand-to-mouth sort of entrepreneurship. It wasn't what we usually think of in Silicon Valley as entrepreneurship being super innovative, perhaps, or anything like that. But in context, it was as innovative as anything else in Silicon Valley would have been, and as much entrepreneurship as anything else that you would see in other, you know, in other places in the world. And for me, it's funny. I guess, yes, it's true. When you look back at what we've done with Kiva over the last 4 years, great. We have been social entrepreneurs. But it's not, we didn't go out thinking, I definitely thought over the last few years, oh, social entrepreneurship, how great. I want to do something like that. But then what happened is, you know, you have to get specific, and you have to start with something specific. So we started to do Kiva, the very, very specific mission of Kiva. And then retroactively, we're like, oh, yeah, I guess that's what we're doing. It's pretty entrepreneurial, isn't it? It came down to, we have this mission, and we're going to do whatever we need to do every day to make it happen. And we're going to be scrappy if we need to. We're going to iterate. We're going to put things out there that maybe aren't even perfect, but we're going to keep moving and every day say, what can we do next to meet our goals? And that's what it felt like to me to be entrepreneurial. And I think that's really been informed by the people that originally inspired us in the first place, these micro entrepreneurs all over the world.
And you know what? That's just what entrepreneurs do every day. They're looking around trying to figure out what they could do better. Do you have a story or two that you could share with some of the entrepreneurs that have taken loans and been successful and then paid the loans off?
Sure. I mean, there are so many. That's one of the hardest questions I get, because really, I mean, every one of them is an amazing success story. But I can tell you, for example, there was a woman that really was one of the very first people that I ever met in East Africa who did such amazing stuff. She'd actually started, she'd started one business, like a charcoal selling business, and she'd gotten only $100. And from that initial business, she did the equivalent of like what a multinational corporation would do. Like, all the principles were there. She started with her one business, and then she diversified, and then she expanded not just from her local markets. She went to markets in other trading centers in other villages, so she expanded beyond her geographic region. She started 5 other small businesses of all different types. I mean, really things you wouldn't think would be related, but she found what she did was she got practice, and then she got very good at seeing market needs and seeing opportunities. So she had the capital after time, and she was able to say, I think a very small catering business that, you know, you could start with $200 or $300. I think that's what's needed. So she did that, and she did the next thing and the next thing. She just blew me away, because you knew that had she just been dealing in another environment, you know, with bigger numbers, she would be the head of a huge multinational corporation that was doing all sorts of different things really well. So people like that just always blow me away. I'd say truly, it sounds like a bit of a cheesy answer, but the real truth is, I mean, any story that you read on the Kiva site, there's something to learn, there's something to appreciate, and there's something to, I think, say, hey, you know, good job there to the entrepreneur that's doing it. Because each person is taking a risk, even just in accepting a loan and putting themselves out there and saying, I'm going to try. I'm going to try to do things differently. I'm going to try to make my life better and life for my family better. So just taking advantage of that opportunity is something that I think should be really applauded, and in and of itself is really a triumph and a great thing to see happen. So that's the hardest question to answer, because all of the entrepreneurs you see on Kiva, I truly find inspirational in some.
Well, thank you for sharing that. That really is inspirational.
Well, you know, the other thing, and I'm sure somebody has already tumbled to this, there's a business book in this. You know, when you said that she was making all the right entrepreneurial business moves, you know, from a principal perspective, there's got to be a lot of nuggets of wisdom in there.
Mm-hmm.
You had mentioned offline, Jessica, that you are involved with Ashoka.
Well, yes. I have found a lot of inspiration in Ashoka over the years, and sort of was introduced to the idea of social entrepreneurship through Ashoka. But additionally, Keith has been honored as, you know, with the Ashoka Fellowship very recently, and we're really excited to be part of that community.
Congratulations. Let me get on with another question here. Who has been either a role model or a mentor in your career and your life?
Oh, my goodness. Okay, that's the hardest question. I feel like I've been blessed and so surrounded by encouragers. I mean, can I say, like, my top 5?
Okay.
My parents, first and foremost, have always given me, actually, it was really funny. I watched the Emmys last night. I actually don't have a television, but I'm with my brother and sister-in-law in L.A., and we were watching the Emmys a little bit. And Tina Fey said something funny. She was like, you know, thanks to my mom and dad for giving me confidence that was way disproportionate to my looks and ability. And I was like, that's what my parents said. So I'd say my parents, first and foremost, made it without question just an obvious thing that I could do anything I wanted to in the world. And so that was kind of the foundational piece, a very supportive family. But there have been a few others. When I heard Dr. Muhammad Yunus speak, his story spoke to me like no other had at that point. And that's what propelled me to kind of quit my job and go off and try to figure out microfinance for myself. And try to do something like what he did, like walk around, meet people, listen to their needs, and help. So he gave me a huge inspiration. And then I guess the other person I'll mention is Brian Lennon actually gave me that opportunity to go. He is the founder and executive director of a really great organization called Village Enterprise Fund, and they give $100 grants to entrepreneurs for business creation, and they really start people on the very first rung of the economic ladder. These are often folks who are doing such risky things, like with their really subsistence farming that, you know, if it doesn't rain, everything's lost. Really, really small businesses who these entrepreneurs wouldn't take a loan probably because they would be not in the right position even to do so. So their organization is amazing, and I basically met with Brian right around the time I decided I was going to go figure out a way to work in microfinance, and he really gave me that opportunity. He listened to me, kind of met me where I was, and said, hey, Jess, even though I was this, I had no skills that I could really name. I had studied philosophy and poetry undergrad, and I had done event planning and administrative things in my job. I really didn't have a lot to go on to say, look, here's why you should hire me and let me go do microfinance. But he gave me that chance. And on that trip out to East Africa with Village Enterprise Fund, that's what changed my life, and that's where we had the ideas for Kiva. And so I am absolutely grateful for him, among many, many others in my life over the last decade. There's a lot of people.
Well, that's one of the good things about entrepreneurship as well, that there are lots of other people around to encourage you and to offer wisdom. One piece of wisdom that we've been getting lots of interesting answers to on this particular interview series is the toughest thing you've ever had to do. So we're curious, what is the toughest thing so far that you've had to do in your career?
That is a really great question. I would say without a doubt that it's been really tough to, you know, when you do something that you care about so much, and also something that is like with a social mission, I think it becomes like your baby, and it becomes like your, I don't know, there's all these analogies, your right arm, and you just feel so attached. And so it's been a challenge, I think, to do the work-life balance thing in any way, because you just feel so driven, so consumed by it, and you want to spend all your waking hours on it, but that can be unhealthy and actually lead to burnout and that sort of thing. So finding the right balance has been probably the biggest challenge, and also being removed enough to make objective decisions. You know, it's always a challenge when you're so in love with the work that you get to do.
So speaking of personal and professional balance, you know, what do you do to bring balance with all the entrepreneurs you're trying to help and the changes on the website? How do you manage that?
Well, I think it's just about kind of knowing what your priorities are and knowing what your boundaries are, what you can control and what you can't, and then just working away. I think it's just kind of a daily reminding and a daily recalibration, saying, okay, here's what we're about, here's what we can do, here's what we can't do, and let's just keep moving forward. I think another little trick, too, is just checking yourself often to make sure you're not making decisions out of fear or panic in any way. I mean, we're in an interesting space where we haven't had competitors, per se, really, and we don't even think that way. But if we were forced to look at other kind of collaborative organizations out there as competitors, even if we saw them as such, I think it would be the wrong move to be driven to make any sort of decisions or move out of a place of fear. And just like it is in life, I mean, just kind of knowing who you are and what you're about, knowing who you're not, and just being that versus trying to respond to what else is out there or what someone else is doing. I think staying true and kind of pure to your own mission is what it's about. And you can stay sane.
You've actually kind of covered part of a question I was just going to ask you, and that is, you've done so many things, Jessica, and you've worked with all kinds of people around the world, but if you were right now sitting down in front of a young potential entrepreneur, what advice would you give them?
Okay, I have the privilege of getting to do this quite a bit. This is my number one thing. I would say two things. Follow whatever you are really passionate about, and it can be something that doesn't even make a lot of sense, like, I mean, what do you do? When we were passionate about the stories, and how do you follow that? We loved them. We celebrated them. We read them ourselves. We laughed. We cried. We, like, just got into those stories. And then by sharing those stories, the thing that we were passionate about, with the people that we were passionate about, our friends and family, that led to some really great stuff. So just follow as best you can the stuff that you're passionate about would be number one. And number two, if you're going to do something and start something and you really believe that's what kind of you're meant to do next, I would say don't be afraid to start small. And in fact, that is really the only way to begin. You know, I just finished my MBA at Stanford, and I can't say enough good things about that place and that community. It was amazing. Additionally, I think it's a place where it's easy to think big very quickly and say, let's go change the world in these huge, huge ways, and let's have, you know, you don't want to start something unless it's scalable and unless it's going to touch, you know, 3 million people in its first 2 years or whatever. It's easy to say, think big or go home, and what's your plan for scalability? You need to know that right now. And I would say to a, you know, budding entrepreneur, don't be afraid to be very, very, very specific about what you want to do and how you want to begin. And you can figure out, you should definitely think long term too, but goodness, it's not a bad thing to start small. And in fact, I really believe that's kind of the way that you have to do it. And to just do a little plug, there's a wonderful man who I would consider a mentor and certainly someone that I've looked up to and learned a lot from. His name is Paul Pawlak, P-O-L-A-K, and he wrote a book called Out of Poverty. And he really talks a lot about being in context, like designing whatever you're designing, particularly if it's a program or a service or a product to serve the poor. Go be with the people that you want to serve. Go get to know them as individuals and design things for individuals, not, you know, this group of statistics or the masses. Or go meet real people, design for them, start with them, serve them, and then see how you can grow things. So that would be my recommendation. Don't be afraid to start small and be really passionate about what you're doing, because that's the way good things happen.
Dare I say that I'm an old and wizened woman, but you know, that thing about, you know, your advice about starting small and don't be afraid to do that, it feels a lot like something I've come to view as being true, that you just often don't know what the next turn is going to be. You have to live it a while and see how things change and mature and then be opportunistic about which way things are going to go, because you often don't see the end.
Oh, yes, and you can't. Like, you actually probably sometimes cannot see the next step. It's totally impossible until you make the first one.
That's right, and that's actually part of the fun, isn't it?
It is part of the fun, and it's also, by the way, a big part of the book that I'm just finishing.
You had to plug your book.
Mastering Change.
You had
yes,
to
yes.
plug your book.
Oh, wow.
Well, so I think we have a book here. Okay, Ooh. So I have to ask you, though, is there such a book about entrepreneurism in Kiva, about teaching the basic elements of entrepreneurship?
No, not yet, but I think there are about 20 books we can write based on, you know, different angles, different experiences. I mean, Web 2.0, the peer-to-peer, the power of connecting people, you know, what have we learned about business from the entrepreneurs out there? There's a lot of potential.
Oh, absolutely. I look forward to it.
Me too.
You've already really achieved a lot, and it's quite inspirational to talk to you, and Kiva is just such a great organization. What's next for you? We just talked about how sometimes you just can't see around the corner. Do you have any long-term vision that you want to share with our listeners about what's next?
No, I don't, but I will say that something that's been crazy is just this feeling that, I mean, this is my, like, life dream. You read my, you know, my Stanford Business School essays from 3 years ago, and it was basically someday, maybe, I'll get to be a part of something like this. And so I feel like the luckiest person in the world. And to think that there could be other things in the future just blows my mind. I feel overwhelmed even thinking about it, but it overwhelms in the most positive and excited way, because I already feel like, goodness, if this was my life, and if my life ended tomorrow, I would be a really thankful, happy person, because I feel like I've gotten to see my dream kind of come true. So I feel like everything else will be icing on the cake, and what I'm trying to do is just stay open to possibility and learn and read and talk to people and stay open to observing what's going on out there. And I'm thankful for Kiva, and I'm thankful for whatever the future holds. But I'll let you know when I know.
Well, that has to be the most inspirational thing I've ever heard. I mean, just to hear the passion in your voice and the excitement, it gives me goosebumps. So I'm happy for you, and I hope other people out there benefit from all the work that you're doing.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. I just feel very, very lucky.
Wow, Jessica, I want to thank you for joining us today. This was marvelous plus.
All of you.
And by the way, you listeners out there, would you pass this interview along to others that you think would be interested? We'll make sure that we've got a website link to Kiva. Say your website.
It's www.kiva.org. So KIVA.org.
Sounds wonderful. This has just been great. Here we are with the National Center for Women and Information Technology. You're doing some great stuff by bringing these messages out from these people who are doing wonderful things. Thanks.
Well, thanks, and listeners can find these interviews at www.ncwit.org and at w3w3.com.
You bet.
Thanks, so thank
Jessica.
You very much.
Thank you.